The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, for the last 20 minutes of the show, we're joined by Mick Clifford, special correspondent with the Irish Examiner, NASA Hurricane, Green TD for Dublin Central, the party spokesperson on finance and health, and Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin Senator. You're all very welcome to our Friday forum. And during the break, we were talking about bikes. I have three cyclists among me at the moment. Mick, you cycle the bike all the time.
I do, Pat. I've got into the habit of it. And to be honest with you, coming into town anytime is just far handier because, I mean, the whole notion of parking, traffic drives me around the bend. And, you know, there's all benefits, put it that way, you know.
Okay, NASA, you have revealed something to me. You took something out of your bag.
So I took out my Dublin Bikes charger, which, you know, if people don't know, you can have an electric Dublin Bikes now. I'm not a very confident cyclist and I live in Cabra, which is all a slow uphill from the city centre. And, you know, I'm not confident always that I can make it the whole way home. I have to say it's been life changing. I absolutely love it. It's really affordable and you charge it yourself and you bring it with
you. So it's you give the deposit, you get a battery and you charge it.
Yeah.
So it's up to you if you run out of juice.
It's up to you if you run out of juice, but you can use that battery to charge your phone if you get caught out too. I can't say fairer than that.
Okay, and Lynn, you're a cyclist, but today, alas.
Yes, no, I left the house today and got a puncture just outside the house, so not on the bike today, but no, I'm a recent convert to cycling. I got the bike to work electric bike scheme, and now I wouldn't go back because, as Mick said, you just get home much quicker on the bike.
I'm glad the politicians among us are saying that, because I don't know whether you saw your party leader last night on The Tonight Show. He says he's in favour of getting rid of car parking for politicians at Leinster House. That would include senators and TDs. Have a listen.
I'd move it into the multi-storey car park on Molesworth Street. It's only 5 minutes walk away. And yeah, I think we should lead by example in that sort of project. But that's a matter for the Oireachtas Commission. The Dáil's decide that.
Have you put that forward as a proposal?
I'm doing it here and now. And I think that multi-storey car park, as I said, is only around the corner. So it's not like some Dáil deputies, they have to make, or senators, like they do have to drive. They may for whatever different circumstances they have. So it's not, this won't work if we do it as pointing at people, shame people, make people, how dare you drive? How dare you be the problem? But yeah, I'd love to see us.
Okay,
make
so you're
that
saying
switch.
On the programme tonight, get rid of the car park at Leinster House.
I've always felt, why wouldn't we put it into the multi-storey car park, which is 2 minutes walk away?
What would you like to see in its place?
I think, firstly, one of the things I've always felt is, if you, oh God, you're into details here now. If you look at Leinster Lawn, which is the Leinster House actually faced out in Marion Square, that was the front of the building. I'd love if you could actually go from the National Art Gallery and the National History Museum into that front lawn area where the car park is at the moment. I could almost see it as an extension of Marion Square, that you'd have more green space in the centre of the city, in a very beautiful part of the city.
It's called policy on the hoof, NASA, is it not?
Well, the only thing is, well, first of all, it's easy for me to say because I tend to walk to work. And there are rural TDs who have to come at all hours of the day and night who
need some
measure
of car parking. Well, if you think of Michael Healy-Ray getting from Kilgarvan into Killarney, then onto the train, then up to Houston, then off
to
Houston.
I think that was the father, Pat.
No, that's a fair point.
Taking the scooter then to Leinster House.
I believe there is a DCC-owned car park on Schoolhouse Lane, in fact, which would provide car parking. You know, I have to say, we're talking about this in terms of transport. It's less about transport and it's more that it just looks bad. I had a Bavarian government over, a very formal delegation. We wanted to take a photo. And I was kind of like, well, here's our national parliament. It's that door there beside the car park. And it doesn't look great. So I do think, you know, it's time. And actually, we did ask, I think it was last year, the Cairn Corridor to do a transport survey amongst politicians and people who use the building.
But of course, the problem would be, from the ordinary point of view, move it to Molesworth Street and then they vouch their expenses for paying for the parking. So no discouragement at all. And a little bit of waddle for the people who should have a walk. Anyway, want to talk about bankers' bonuses. Lynn.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's just an example of the government being tone deaf in a cost of living crisis to be signing off on bankers getting bonuses. I think will just go down like a lead balloon for most households. I mean, was it only yesterday we saw 40% of households are in energy poverty now? You know, and this idea that we have to pay to get the best. We were paying huge salaries to the so-called best bankers who crashed the banking system. And that analogy doesn't work when it comes to paying nurses or paying people who are on low incomes to keep them in their jobs. We're always told,
Is it all, though, about the, you know, if you don't own any of the bank anymore, it's maybe a bit unreasonable to stop them running their businesses as they feel
well,
they should?
The fact that it has to be brought to the Cabinet for approval just shows, I suppose, the what are the priorities of Pascal Donoghue? Do you know what I mean? That he actually prioritised to do this change. That's the issue. Do you know what I mean? When yeah. we have such a cost of living crisis.
Look, I've been very critical of this. I think we've paid people in this manner before and it didn't do us any justice. And also, you know, I suppose the only good thing to say about this is it will attract income tax in a way that the bank's profits wouldn't. But, you know, your point around their private businesses, that's really the core of it. We know that banks here are too big to fail. We don't allow them to fail. But we don't replace it and we don't become serious about public banking. So they're not normal private enterprises because we don't allow them to fail. And therefore, the compensation should reflect that.
Yeah. Mick?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, look, in a scenario, why just before it appears Pascal Donoghue is moving out of the Department of Finance, he felt it necessary to bring in this? Why at a time when healthcare workers, frontline workers have not yet received the very relatively meagre bonus that they're entitled as a result of the pandemic? And one other issue, when this was brought in, it was suggested by a commission that the cap be at €690,000. And the government said, no, that's too much. We'll bring it down. So they accepted political realities. Yet now they appear to be going the completely the opposite direction, and just the timing more than anything just makes no sense.
Big mystery. Why did Pascal do it? Why not leave it for Michael McGrath? That's the mystery.
Well,
why he's going out upon himself.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Could well ask that, and you could have all sorts of speculation and that. But you know, I think as Lynn said, it's tone deaf.
Yeah. And now, still on money, the business of cash. Are you all taken by the idea that shops have got to take cash, got to be able to take cash rather than simply card? Because, you know, normally when people say, oh, I take cash only, they think it's a dodge, a revenue dodge.
No.
Sorry. there are a lot of low-income households who do deal in cash, you know, and even if they get paid into the bank, they'll take the money out because that way then if they're short of cash, the direct
debit
system.
They know what they
have. Exactly, and they can manage their money that way. So we need to have a system where that, you know, that those people can go in and use cash and that we're not negatively impacting on them and forcing them to keep money in the bank that then they don't have the control over the payments coming out. So look, I think it's welcome that we're going to ensure that shops will take cash.
Definitely. I mean, you can't go to a system whereby everybody is excluded from using cash. As an average person, I've seen the way I deal completely transformed as a result of the pandemic. I rarely use cash compared to what I did. But there will be people for whom they'll have to have cash and they'll have to use it. And if you're to try and exclude that now, I think it'd be way too fast.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of having people being required to take cards, I thought might be one of the changes they'd bring about. But then very small retailers say, we have to pay MasterCard or Visa 2.5%. Mm-hmm. And that's eating into our margins. So we're not going to take cards. We're simply restricting ourselves to cash. I would have thought that maybe given the pandemic and everything that followed from it, that we might insist on cards being available. We've done so with taxis, I believe. You have to...
Yeah, I mean, there is an argument for that, but ultimately this is about choice and financial inclusion. And there are people who budget based on the cash that they have in their hands. There are other people who, you know, they literally pay through their phone. I do think we need to have a conversation, and I noticed that Pascal Donoghue refers a lot to Revolut and those kind of financial services as, you know, the kind of the next generation of banking. But of course, Revolut's not a bank, not really. And I think you are seeing a generation of people who are coming up and, you know, 19, 20 year olds who are thinking of Revolut and those kind of financial transaction apps as a bank, as a banking system, and they're not.
But
and it does throw up all sorts
Revolut
of questions.
Is governed by the Central Bank of Lithuania, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
And we had the opportunity to have it here, and our central bank, it seems, was a bit tardy in giving approval. So they're going to be offering loans and everything. They're going to be acting like a bank. You say they're not one.
Well, this is it. We need to have that conversation. We can't consistently point to them as the reason why it's okay to close down branches of banks and yet not have them under the kind of regulation that would be required here.
Were you in the chamber for Ursula von der Leyen's speech? What did you make of it, Nasa?
I thought it was an excellent speech. I have to say, I did like the fact that, you know, she really focused on the idea that Ireland is a leader and a contributor to the EU and is a an inspiration for other EU countries, and I thought it was a very
what she
useful
called it, a green superpower.
A green superpower. I mean, I have to say, we kind of, you know, don't maybe yeah. don't think of ourselves in those terms, but
isn't this the kind of the oils
fantastic.
Under the sands of Saudi Arabia? We've got the wind off our west coast. It's an equivalent if we can exploit it.
You know, we have the resources in terms of, obviously wave isn't quite up there yet, but in terms of solar and wind, we could be the renewable island. We could be 100% renewable if we really put our minds to it. We don't have the kind of level of population that makes that impossible. We could do that.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I thought it was a decent enough speech, and I particularly welcomed that she was so hard on insisting that there will be no hard border on the island of Ireland. I think that was a really important message to send yeah. out. You know, so but and Nessa's right in terms of the renewable energy. European countries are looking at Ireland as being a gateway to support that kind of renewable energy going into an interconnected grid.
I saw her speak later on in the day. She was at the Business and Finance Awards, and I found her most charismatic in the flesh, in a way that seeing sound bites on television, I never heard the power of her oratory. And she was magnificent, talking about the protocol, solidarity with Ireland. There will never be a hard border on the island of Ireland.
I think that
solidarity
got the longest clap was the hard border issue. And it is very encouraging for politicians to hear that kind of that level of commitment from her.
The one thing about her speech is I was a small bit disappointed in that she quoted the Saw Doctors. I would have thought there was a few other acts, like not least Van Morrison or somebody of that stature, rather than. But nothing against the Saw Doctors now, but just coming from the present European Commission, you know, wouldn't necessarily have been the first place I would have gone to for looking for a quote.
It's common touch.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Now, much of the talk earlier in the week was about, you know, arming the Gardaí. What do you think, Nessa, of the idea? Obviously, Leo Varadkar, as Thánaiste just said, well, he wouldn't stand in the way of the Garda Commissioner, but it is the Garda Commissioner's call.
Well, first of all, I don't believe that the guards themselves particularly want to be armed. Let's just be clear that, you know, there are units of the guards who have access to firearms where that's deemed, you know, suitable. I don't think that it works particularly well in other countries. And I have to say, it's one of the things that I think we do right in this country insofar as that it is an Garda Síochána. They are keepers of the peace. And you can see it in the way we deal with protests. You can see it in the way that we deal with community policing, that we have, I for the most part, got that right, that it, they are keepers of the peace and they work with communities. They do not need to be armed across the board.
Yeah. The GRA were on with us during the weekend. They said, you know, they don't want to be generally armed, but they want more armed response units in more timely locations. They gave an example of, you know, a standoff with someone who was armed. They needed the armed response unit, and it took an hour and a half to get there. Now, a lot can unfold in a standoff situation in an hour and a half. So they don't want them all armed, but they want more people armed.
No, I think the issues with the Gardaí is recruitment and resourcing, and that hasn't happened for the last sort of 10 years that Fine Gael have held that portfolio. Community policing in Ireland was once hailed as being the model, and that other European countries were incredibly, you know, envious of the type of community policing model we had. We need to properly resource it. We haven't gotten back to that level pre-crash where, you know, you had community police who are well embedded in the communities, in schools, in diversionary projects, do you mean, sort of helping those young people to sort of not get involved in crime in the first place. But they need to be resourced, and the one size fits all rostering model also doesn't work. Mm. Community policing have to be available during the day to be able to get into those communities, to be able to engage with them and build up a level of trust.
Mick,
and that needs resourcing and recruitment.
It was, to be honest with you, Pat, it was a ludicrous suggestion. The notion that we're at a stage in this country where we need to arm the Gardaí on the street. And what it spoke to more than anything was Fine Gael trying to use the so-called law and order card. That's been about the third occasion in recent months that they've done that. They're trying to distinguish themselves policy-wise from most other parties. But that stuff is for the birds. I mean, arming the Gardaí in this society, it wouldn't but have negative consequences.
I'm just wondering, there are many other societies that don't have access to firearms. I mean, when you talk about America, you can go to a shop and buy a gun. You know, every yeah. Joe citizen can. Whereas in most European countries, you can't do that. You can get a hunting yeah. rifle, maybe. And yet most of, if not all of, the police forces generally routinely on the beat, at least one cohort of them will be a regularly armed police
not
force.
Not in the UK, I don't think they
not
are.
Not in the UK, no.
Yeah.
But you're seeing more and more machine guns being worn by uniformed police on particular duties. You see that all the time. But in Spain, Portugal, Italy, you'll see they all wear a pistol.
In fairness as well, the people in this country have a different relationship with the police than in a lot of those countries, and they're drawn from particular sections of society, etc. in those countries. That's not the case here. It's policing by consent, and to be fair, the idea that this is a violent society that would require that kind of response.
And also, it might make the police potentially pot-shottable, by people who are armed.
It's now a 50-50 game.
You've got a gun, I've got a gun.
Much of a serious suggestion it was, more than a media ploy, I agree with me.
Okay, the suggestion from one Fianna Fáil deputy that we should put a cap on refugees, Lynn.
Well, look, it was deeply disheartening to hear the comments from that deputy, because there's an international law that we take refugees in, but I think what we need to do now is to focus people's minds about resourcing the way the refugees are being brought in.
One of the intriguing things, Lynn and Michael and NASA, is the problems that are being caused by large numbers of males, single males arriving. And I'm wondering, why are we getting so many single males arriving?
Because
when families arrive, there seems to be no issue at all.
There was protests in Fermoy for families arriving as well. What we need to see from the government is a whole of government response. We need the fact that when you're providing emergency accommodation for people who are fleeing from a war and seeking asylum in this country, you have to go in and ensure that we have the education places, that we have the health services in place.
Catherine Day's report indicated all of that.
And that's what has to happen. Communities are just frustrated because of a lack of resources.
I have some sympathy with the government on this, to the extent that nobody could have predicted we'd have 60,000 to 70,000 people coming in at the moment. It is very difficult, but it does need to be resourced properly. And just to give you a small example, I was down the East Wall, I wrote a piece about it, I was down there last Tuesday week, and it was local people to a large extent, and there was a small cohort of what you might call Farai. Saturday I passed it and I went down there, and the nature of it had changed completely. You had people, there was a person speaking, the same person who'd been speaking the police week, and he was talking about culture war stuff, and it was off the wall. And there's a danger there if you don't keep an eye on that.
Just to answer your question about young men, obviously this interacts, so we have international
Georgians,
people,
Albanians, safe countries, so-called.
Absolutely. But that's because, post-COVID, nobody was able to travel, and you will have economic migrants. And I think we have to have a conversation around not demonising economic migrants who are at full employment in this country, and people travel to work. That's actually not the worst thing in the world. We've all done that.
Again, Catherine Day has that in her report. We should have a proper visa situation.
Absolutely.
If people are economic migrants, let's give them visas and conditions under which they enter.
The reality is the Ukrainian crisis, we can't put a cap on that. I'm sure the Ukrainians would love to put a cap on that war, and they can. Yeah. So what are we going to do? What's the real answer here?
We have to leave it there. Mick Clifford and NASA Hurricane and Lynn Boylan, thank you all very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.